Well, folks, it's another week for Valley Edition, and I, Mike Malevsky, am here with three panelists, Patty Rosnell, sitting in for Terry Snyder, Zaz Hollander, who's on the phone calling in, and Tom Anderson, sitting in for Mark Kelsey. Welcome all. Well, this is an interesting week in the sense that we've had one assembly meeting that was a special meeting, and we want to probably touch on that because it deals with an issue that is incredibly important to the borough and anyone who's served by the borough, and that has to do with the ferry. And then we'll move on to what I'm relishing as an opportunity to talk about what's likely to happen coming up on Tuesday, given some somewhat recent information and polls, et cetera. So first of all, I know, Zaz, you and Patty were both there in the assembly room or the media room. Well, how can we best sum up what happened there? And maybe we should start with Zaz.
Boy, I would sum up 44 minutes of reporter types talking to each other in a room while the assembly talked about the ferry in executive session. And then, I don't know, got Pammy Patty does 10 minutes of basically punting any kind of a decision until next Thursday.
Okay. Patty, would you agree with that?
Oh, I think that's a great characterization.
Okay.
It is. A lot of question marks, I think, rising up from the audience, little head bubbles at the time.
Okay.
Well, and I think that one of the questions, Deputy Mayor Ron Arvin, who was kind of running the meeting because the mayor was, I believe, in Nome and on the phone, implied that the assembly wanted more information from staff before they made a decision. And, you know, I caught myself thinking, like, gosh, if I ran a private company and was told on a Tuesday that I owed $12 million to the federal government, I would probably want to know by the next day what the various financials were. And I found it surprising that the assembly hadn't had that information at hand by the time they had a scheduled meeting to talk about the ferry.
The ticking timer was interesting, exactly, in that we have 30 days from the date of the letter. The letter was dated August 5th, and already it was well over a week when the meeting happened, and then they put it off another 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Tom, you were at somewhat of a distance from that particular room at that time. Any sense of things that you heard?
Sure. Well, from a bird's eye view, I felt that the city, or I should say the borough manager, Moosey, and to a lesser degree, Larry DeVilbiss, while trying to inform the public that they had a handle on it, maybe didn't take it as seriously or exude that they were taking it seriously. It reminds me of pilots in a sad story often when a plane goes down and you hear the black box and the pilot saying, I've got it. And then, of course, they hit the ground and he doesn't have it. And I worry. That's a lot of money. That's a short timeline. And I don't think the public recognizes how big of a deal that is if we're held to that liability.
Okay. Yeah, but that's an interesting observation and a nice characterization. Zaz, any other comment to throw in here at this point on that topic?
Well, on the ferry yesterday, the U.S. Secretary of Transportation came to Wasilla, one of the latest of the secretaries, to visit Alaska with Senator Mark Begich. I won't say anything else about that. Maybe Tom or Patty have an opinion. But this is Secretary Anthony Fox. And, I have to admit, it's really easy to geek out when you see, any secretary from any administration showing up in Wasilla. It's kind of neat. But the subject of the ferry, which is really the most immediate concern, you could say, that the borough has in terms of federal funding, and the secretary does oversee the Federal Transit Administration, which is the agency asking for its $12 million back, the ferry didn't come up during this, fairly lengthy roundtable about transportation concerns. It apparently came up in a closed-door session with borough officials, the attorney and the manager, the secretary, Anthony Fox, and Senator Begich. But I did ask the secretary very briefly, do you have the authority to waive these funds? Can you pardon the borough? No. And then he moved on. He changed the subject to happier news. But it doesn't seem as if the borough is going to get a pass.
Oh, okay. That's a good summary.
I would just add that I agree with Zaz, and I would assume you both agree, too, in the studio. to have, I mean, I'm a fan of U.S. Senator Begich's, and he's on my radio show often, and he doesn't, he's not self-aggrandizing, but I will be aggrandizing for him to say, when you get right or wrong what they said, the head of EPA, the Secretary of Transportation, Secretary of Labor, Secretary of Commerce, and Secretary of Energy are coming in the next 3 months. I mean, he has helped facilitate this. That's impressive to me.
Okay. And it's nice, Zaz, that you were able to at least ask that question, because rarely do we have that opportunity. So good for you.
Exactly.
Well, now let's segue a little bit, since it was a sort of a light meeting week. I'd like to start, as we look toward this Tuesday's primary, with something that was actually covered on the front page of the Alaska Dispatch News today, and that was a reflection about and a comparison about Joe Miller's position relative to his 2010 win in the primary. In some cases, observers have indicated that it looks like it's eerily similar in the sense that he's way behind. Maybe Tom, any comments about that? This kind of similar position, or how have things changed for Mr. Miller?
I do not think they've changed, and I'll tell you, my PR firm owns and operates Alaska Politics and Elections. We started the blog 3 months ago, and we've written some pretty heated articles on Joe Miller. The most recently, yesterday, one was published regarding his stance or lack thereof with the Arctic. And I think Joe accuses his two opponents, Miller and Sullivan, of rhetoric, and yet he really shrouds himself in the same. I think that his use of liberty and patriotism and one-liners may score him in form a win in a debate for, you know, the Lincoln-Douglas era style. But I don't think that he has depth. I don't think he has the experience. I think he's very similar to 2010. And I think that if Meade Treadwell loses, it'll be because of Joe Miller. I think if Joe Miller was out, Meade Treadwell would handily defeat Dan Sullivan. I don't know if Meade could defeat Mark Begich, but I think Joe Miller may be the spoiler, and I think he's consistent. And he's consistent in a rhetoric that's very, in my opinion, as a Republican, extreme, whether it be, you know, send the kids back to their families in Central America, nonsense like that, when families are asking their kids and bringing their kids to come to America. Mm-hmm. You go down the line with the law of the sea and the Arctic, a lot of different areas. I don't think he has expertise, but he can espouse his opinion very eloquently. I don't know if that'll get him votes. He certainly won't win.
So there's been some suggestion that Mr. Miller has not really moved on very much, although even in an interview here, he described what he had learned from 2010, and he had changed his tactic. But perhaps the voting group that had supported him has moved on and perhaps is not as willing to provide him with a victory.
You may be right. I think the Tea Party has endorsed him, and the Conservative Party, there's a few Patriots group, the group out here, a few of those, and I think the other guests may have insight as well. I think that he will have his core, but I don't even think it'll bring Helenthal, the pollster in Anchorage. Mark claims that it'll be Sullivan, Miller, and Treadwell, and I don't believe that at all, based on the most recent polling results. I mean, they're very, Sullivan and Treadwell are neck and neck, and there's a lot of undecideds that they're trying to milk this week.
Mm-hmm. Well, both in this race and in some other races, particularly for the Alaskan legislature, there's an interesting question that is out there. Should someone, the third person in the race, lose, would they go on to try to follow Lisa Murkowski's role and do a write-in? Do you think there are any races there anyone has an op, you know, the likelihood of that happening happen?
If you're asking me, no, I don't. And I think Amanda Coyne, the blogger formerly with Alaska Dispatch News, she wrote yesterday and published her interpretation of Miller's debate on KTUU last night, which in her comments she stated he will not.
I've heard that.
I didn't hear that in the debate, but I didn't hear the full debate. I don't know if anyone else heard if he said, I will not write in, I will not be a spoiler. I hope he won't be. Did he? Okay.
Well, Nat Hurd had a story in ADN today about his comments that he will support, if Sullivan or Treadwell win, he will support them.
Okay, so basically he didn't specifically say that, but the inferences.
The absolute inference implication, and how else could you read that? I guess that's the thing.
But he also said he believes he's going to be the primary winner, quote, voters and God's help. So he's got a big supporter up in the sky.
Yeah, something happening. Well, staying for a moment in that race involving Dan Sullivan, there was a recent report that a rather large sum of money devolved upon Dan Sullivan running for U.S. Senate from some family members, hundreds of thousands of dollars, apparently. The sense I had was that had already been spent. It was just to fill in a hole that was there of some sort. And that continues to raise the question, it appears in a variety of places, even with the SB 21 ballot issue. Where is the money coming from, and does anybody who's voting really care? Comments? Patty?
I think people
are really
go ahead, Zaz. I'm sorry to jump in, but I think people care very much about that because it is for lack of a better description, a simple way to figure out what kind of favors the candidates may have to return once they're elected.
Zaz is correct, I feel, and I think that if there are two Achilles heels for Dan Sullivan, they would be the lack of nexus with him in residency here. I mean, 2009, he had a fishing license that was a non-residential license in our APE, Alaska Politics and Elections. We wrote about that and had it researched. And then the fact that the majority of his money is from out of state and from his father and from his brother who run this paint and some type of company in Ohio. And if you add this up, I can't imagine, and I think Zaz said it as well, I can't imagine that someone wouldn't be concerned about that. You don't have to be born in Alaska and be a 574 for the zip code or for your Social Security number, but I do think that you have to have enough permanency, just like the permanent fund dividend application says. Are you a permanent resident? Do you plan on staying? It doesn't feel like Dan Sullivan has that link. It seems like he's an opportunist based on his resume in these short positions, briefly Attorney General, briefly Natural Resources Commissioner. There's the Pentagon officials and Condoleezza Rice, who does an ad for him, but they don't even have a picture of them together. Mm-hmm. It concerns me.
Okay. Yeah, I understand that. I would like to segue a little bit over to the ballot proposition. I think we could do a long... Well, if you try to follow the conflicting presentations on what it all means or the facts behind it, it's a long trail. And it continues to go on. I notice today's paper, on and on. It seems as we get closer, the two sides are reinvigorated. And you have everyone being brought out. Most recently, for example, after the previous announcement that there were a couple of unions that were in support of yes on the repeal, we have today some independent oil companies saying no on the repeal. I'm interested in two things. The first, how close do you think the two sides are? How close will this ballot be? Is it going to be really 50-50, or is one side really gaining some momentum and changing right now, or in any case, are there any polls that indicate one way or the other? Tom?
Okay, well, this is what I feel. I think that it will pass. I think that Senate Bill 21 will stay, MAPA will stay in effect. And regardless of the side you're on, you're asking about statistics, analytics, the numbers, and the people that are involved. IBEW typically leans left. State Employees Union definitely leans left. They just came out, as you noted,
sure,
2 days ago and said, well, we're for the repeal. That's not a surprise. You have the carpenters, you have the operating engineers, you have the Teamsters, the laborers, the classics of the trade unions that lean right or moderate that are supporting it. But when you look at it's the game and law of numbers. When you look at how many businesses, whether we agree or not with what they think, when you look at the businesses stepping up, the native corporations, the regionals, the sub-regionals, all these different layers, and you look at the chambers and solidarity, rotaries, it's like a domino effect. And with that comes employees, and with those employees comes spouses and kids. I don't see it being repealed. I just don't, just based on the law of numbers.
Okay.
And that's my view. I mean, it may be close to 50-50. Maybe it's 48, 42, or
whatever.
Yeah, who knows? Or 52. But I think that you'll say, and I don't know where Zaz lands on that. I don't know if she's a prognosticator as a journalist or not.
Well, that's she's not a very effective one.
We've done this before, and we have had reasonable success on some things. But Zaz, any comment at all of your sense of this, having survived to this point the flurry of different, everything?
Well, very briefly, and not from my perspective as a journalist, and I'm hoping Patty has something to add to this discussion, but I think we're at the point now where there are so many conflicting messages and so much money pouring in that some people at least may be making decisions kind of on a gut level. And I think Tom's point sort of speaks to that, that there are enough families involved and workers involved. A neighbor of ours works on the slope, and he was talking about how he is going to vote against a repeal because whether or not the current tax structure has led to it, he's working right now, and tons of people are working because there's a bunch of deferred maintenance that's now getting fixed. And the companies, for right or for wrong, are arguing that that's because of the current tax structure, and so he's reluctant to mess with that because it's paying the bills.
Okay, and I'm going back to a Latin phrase that I learned a long time ago, post hoc propter hoc. And those of you who remember your Latin know that just because something happens after something else doesn't mean it necessarily caused it. And I think that's one of the discussions that goes on and on and on. Yes, there was a change. And those people that have looked at this closely sometimes say, well, this was in the pipeline. There's a perception of change, which is a psychological issue that involves in improving an economy, and that's true. So there's some perception around that. But I think it's still a question of whether what has been put into place as a new tax regime has actually caused what is viewed as economic plus. Patty, do you have a comment?
Oh, well, I guess my question to you experts would be, what impact do you think the marketing, all the money that's gone into the advertising, has on will have on people's votes?
I will speak first, if I may, and say absolutely. I mean, I have a PR firm, and we do advertising for the Farm Bureau, for Matanuska Electric Association, for the Mat-Su Home Bureau. I mean, it definitely matters with messaging, with branding, and without getting into big buzzwords, without question, when you have advertising, TV, radio, digital, all the different mediums, print, you get a text, you get an email, you get a flyer at work, you see a sign, you see a plane going by with a banner of pigeons, and I kid, but I think absolutely, and I would assume you agree, and Zaz agrees too. Look at Obama, what a master, like him or not, what a master at messaging, profoundly, one of the greatest in history in terms of from digital to computer, just amazing. Their websites, crisp, succinct. And I won't say that vote no or vote yes have had that laurel of accomplishment in terms of communication, but it certainly matters. And the sad thing is, it matters in both ways. For instance, Dan Sullivan is a horrible debater, in my opinion, compared to Joe Miller, Mark Begich, and Mead Treadwell. He just is. If someone were to analyze it, you go to Harvard, Yale, any of the top schools for debate, they would say he looked at his notes too much, too many didn't have cogent responses, and yet his messaging is so good. That's the frustrating part. If you or anyone in the conversation here didn't like Dan, but he wins, and you say, I didn't like his content, obviously, people like his messaging, and that's from advertising. And that's good and bad in our world.
Okay. Well, one related question to SB 21 is a number of people who are candidates for a variety of positions have supported or not SB 21. What kind of effect do you think going forward, if they have chosen wrong on this, that result will have? Just in a kind of a general way. Patty, do you have any comment?
No, I'm flummoxed on that one.
Okay.
I don't think if people understand it enough, even you as an expert, you're a journalist, you're reporting, and you're like, well, I don't want to get too deep into the assiduous layers of it because it gets complicated. I don't think people will link it the same. But if you want to ask that question, ask it to Mark Begich, who on my show 2 days ago said, I have no opinion. I'm not going to say if I'm voting yes or no.
Okay.
He's obviously a strategist. He seems to think that it does matter, or he would have given an answer.
Yeah, and that it's going to be about 50-50.
Exactly.
Right. If you have the capability of looking over any polls or other information that would do it, and you saw absolutely a trend, you'd probably be able to speak to that. But
and yet he said he's opposed to the Pebble Mine because he's seen this. I don't think that'll ever open.
Sure. Okay. We've got that. Well, we've talked about a number of things, a ballot proposition and also one of the races. We do have a few other races going on as well, and they are local, and they deal with the legislature. In some respects, we have people waiting in the wings. We can look over at Wasilla, and we know that the present Wasilla mayor is not in the primary. And he's going to come, he's sort of going through, and then later on will appear in the general election. And we have a similar kind of thing. One of the Senate seats, Warren Kehoe, is also as an independent going on. One of the things that keeps being asked is, does an independent have a shot at actually winning and moving on to the legislature? You have some background in this area, Tom. What do you think the present circumstances, and I'm thinking more generally here, are supportive of an independent actually getting through and making it?
Sure. Well, let me disclose first that I represent our firm, Shella Hughes, and we've worked with Bill Stoltz, designed his sign and did some other work initially, and we've also worked with Mike Dunleavy. I would say this. I would say that they don't have a chance if they are not communicating, as your comment was earlier about messaging, and I think that's important. It's critical. It's the essence of a campaign, unless you're a Sarah Palin or someone with broad appeal or non-appeal, but recognition. I would say that if you're asking me to decide who would win, I don't think any of the incumbents would lose. I think they have too much. The power of incumbency is amazing. Mm-hmm. Once you're in, the lobbyists, their clients, all the people that are inextricably linked to your votes and your decisions, your committee chairmanships, your facilitation of a bill or suppression of it, it's amazing, that power, and it's their livelihood. So those businesses, similar with ballot measure one, they're people that are for and against it, but it's very heated. It's very part of their existence and their career. Same with legislators. So when you have an incumbent like a Lynn Gattis or a Mike Dunleavy, and you get someone that challenges them, unless they are so dynamic and so well-funded and so linked to the community that they have a chance, I don't think you're going to see any overturns. And I don't know if Zaz wants to guess on that, but my hunch is she would agree that the power of incumbency, maybe the Rupright one is unique, but I still don't think Gattis would be taken out.
She's proven to be a very competent campaigner. And Mayor Rupright is kind of a polarizing figure. So I don't know if that's going to serve him well or not against Lynn. I think Warren Keogh's candidacy is a little more interesting, if only because with redistricting, if I remember right, that Senate district now includes a lot of Warren's kind of territory.
Okay. And then, of course, we then come on down to the local areas. And the interesting thing, we've mentioned it before, Patty's followed this as well. We're looking at an assembly which has two seats that are open and up. One has no contest. The other one does, and doesn't have an incumbent. But we also have the potential, should two of those other assembly members move on to Juneau, for two more seats coming up. So it's kind of a domino question, depending upon what happens as we flow out. So it's such a variable that I think, to me, in many respects, the local questions are the ones that are going to be interesting here. Let me see that happening.
I think you're right, and I think it's huge, the way you just explained it. For the public listening, they really have to understand it's going to be a huge election in the primary and in the general, and as we move forward for the Matsu Borough, without question, and with the assembly and with Wasilla and Palmer. And I think Delana Johnson, that's an interesting race. I don't think she can defeat Bill Stoltz, but you're going to see that potential. But I don't think she can overcome. He's a pretty juggernaut in the campaign and in the support sense.
Yeah. Patty?
Overall, I think it's good that you mentioned Delana, that we're seeing some new people running, and in fact, women.
I agree.
Tilton and Wemoff as well. So the three of them, I think it presents us some hope in terms of mixing things up a little bit.
I agree, 100%.
Okay, how about you, Zaz?
I think given the amount of her own money that Delana Johnson is putting into her campaign, you know, arguably that she that is not expected by anybody to win shows that she's got plans for the future as well.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, this feels good. We've pretty much run through the time we have allotted. I want to thank Zaz Hollander for being willing to stop in the midst of an editing process and call in. Thank you, Zaz.
It's a pleasure to have a break from the editing process.
All right. And Patty Rosnell for sitting in for Terry Snyder. And, of course, Tom Anderson from coming all the way over from the other side of the valley and sitting in for Mark Kelsey. Thank you. And we'll be back next week.